Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Juke Joint. I'm Jacob Whitmer. I'm joined once again by my good friend, Aaron New.
Hey, what's going on?
You know...
Okay, I really need to figure out that last week I did it. Every single time I do it, it's like, hey, what's going on? Hey.
You're very self-conscious of your own, way of greeting people.
Well, I like to mix up, especially I spent so long in radio, you know, every week I drive it. I mean, you're on the air at times, five, six times a week. So I'm trying to mix it up every single time I come on and off the air. So, you know, maybe someday I'll figure it out, but today's not one of those days.
Maybe someday. Have we ever considered, doing an episode of this live?
Maybe. Maybe easier.
You think?
Yeah. Just because there's more pressure to perform, you know?
Yeah. Well, then you would have to think, who's watching?
That's
and
a good
where
point.
Would we be going live to?
I'll buy a fake audience and be like, hey, we've got 1,000 listeners. You know, they're not actually listening. It just looks like that, so I can trick myself into thinking it. If that's even a thing you can do, who knows?
I don't know. Think of it this way. You pay them for the first go, and if they actually like it, then they just keep coming for free.
Yeah. 1,000 true fans, or 100, or at this point, give me one.
I mean, do we ever actually promote this thing, or is it normally just we post it and that's it?
Well, I guess on my Instagram when I can, which is about, every week, but well. You think that would drive traffic at least a little bit, but I'm not getting much results. I guess we're going to have to refigure out the strategy.
What, the Instagram crowd isn't showing up in droves to...
I would think at least the word getting out there, there'd be more than two or three listeners an episode, which, I mean, there are sometimes. It kind of fluctuates depending on the topic, but I don't know. It seems like most times we're not getting many listeners per episode, so I guess,
it's... What are the most popular topics?
I think the most popular one was the one where we went live. Actually, let me hop on the phone here real quick. The video will cut off for a second, but
so then
let's see.
I will
talk
instead.
Yeah,
about the craziness of my week.
Yeah, hit me with that.
Last weekend was the weekend of typing. Mm-hmm. I had 4 different writing assignments I'll do within the span of one day.
Uh huh.
So I just pretty much spent my entire Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday just typing, typing, typing. And it reached a point where recently my Google Chrome account glitched and locked me out of all my accounts.
Interesting.
Which was fun. So I had to reset everything, delete the cache and all this stuff. Mm. And so I've been slowly but surely getting back into all the accounts that I have on my Google account. Mm-hmm. One exception, though, which is the account which I don't really have complete control over, nor would I want complete control over it, but it's one that is important for me to have access to, mm-hmm. which is the Serenade of Caffeine YouTube channel.
Oh no.
Now, mind you, the business model of the gaming weekend and how it works is that I make the videos, and then I send them to Nick, and then Nick uploads them.
Mm-hmm.
And... I've never spoken about this directly to him, but the system is that he will upload them whenever he uploads them.
Yeah.
And he titles them, he gives them descriptions, and puts in all the tags. And then I will go in, after he's done that, and look over everything and make sure that it is at a level that I'm happy with and acceptable with. And if it is, I just leave it be. And if it isn't, then I just retitle it or do something like that.
Okay.
So, I currently no longer have the ability to do that final step.
Oh, no.
The polishing session, because...
Is it as simple as getting the password back from him, or is it more complex?
That is exactly what it is. It is, he needs to tell me what the password is.
Which is...
I don't know.
Process?
I mean, I'm definitely not saying it. I'm definitely not saying it on the podcast,
because
Lord knows I'm not going to be like... But so far, I'm waiting on a response from this man to tell me what the password is so I can get back in. Because, I mean, it's one of those things, it's very much, up to our own preferences.
Yeah.
Because he'll pick out a sentence that he thinks in a video. The way he works is that he picks out a sentence that he likes in one of the videos and then uses it as the title.
Trying to get a clickbait title, sort of, what's the most catchy thing,
Right? Yeah. I mean, I don't like calling it a clickbait title because that feels really scummy, but...
but it works.
Well, okay, sure. The thing is, though, is that I think sometimes it goes in a direction that I'm not particularly comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, last weekend, we posted, well, technically we posted three videos, but one of them was a joke. We had one of the episodes of the Spider-Man playthrough that we've been doing with me and John.
Uh-huh.
And there's a joke in the episode where John, like, did voiceover while this guy was giving a speech in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this joke. He essentially had the guy go up on the stage and admit to being a furry and then walk off the stage. Which was funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Then Nick titles it. The episode comes out, Jacob's Gaming Weekend, Spider-Man Part 9 or whatever it is. I'm a furry. And I went, can we change that title? Because the way it's written out there, it looks as if you are insinuating that in this episode I admit to being part of a section of human culture that I am not a part of.
Yeah.
No judgment here, but I don't want to be, you know, like trying to coerce my way into a group of people that I'm not affiliated with. So I normally have to then at that point, instead of making a big deal and telling Nick, hey, retitle the video, I just go in and I change it. So now it's out as a public announcement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's referencing the joke, but it's not like saying something that could be misinterpreted a different
yeah.
way. That's the sort of stuff that I go in to fix. And because I no longer have the password for the channel, I can't potentially do that anymore.
Oh, fun.
Which is frustrating if you're like me and you're very perfectionist and you want some control over how your work comes out. And
yeah.
you don't want to have to keep working through third parties all the time. But
mm-hmm.
hopefully that gets resolved at some point.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
And then the rest of this weekend coming up, if last weekend was the weekend of typing, it's looking with all the Facebook invites I have to things in the next 2 or 3 days that this is going to be the weekend of drinking.
I can see, yeah, because even I'm getting invites to things that are happening this weekend that I'm, you know, 3,000 miles away.
Well, fly down, man. Clearly people want you back.
I would come back if I could. I don't know. Okay, so this will transition well, because I think I'm finally moving into a place, not like into a new home or anything, but like finally transitioning into a career. I guess you can see me like...
I can see you like
my hands
grasping
now.
Grasping at the world.
At the future. That's what we need to add.
I mean, they can't see it. For those of you I'm not seeing, I was doing something I love to do. When people start talking with their hands, I do the mirror thing to point out that they're being overly dramatic.
That's the anyway. Theater kid. But this past week. Okay, long story short, I'm working night shift at Amazon, which I've made that pretty well known on here. Which is terrible, for many reasons, which I won't go into. But
Jeff Bezos keeps knocking on your door. He says, "You coming into work today?"
I lovingly refer to him as Mr. Jeff anytime I refer to work. So it's like, yes, I have to go work for Mr. Jeff tonight. You know, if I don't show up, Mr. Jeff will come to my home. I don't know, you know, anything to make myself
send,
feel better.
Send all the Amazon drones out to your place.
Did you see that video?
No.
Of the giant Amazon blimp and all the drones flying out of the bottom
of
it.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
That is world domination right
I will send this to you here in a moment just so you can... Okay. Let me do it right now before I forget. But, so I'm working at the warehouse and, you know, trying to get switched on to a better shift, which, you know, I keep getting kind of led around saying, yeah, you know, there's opportunities here and here, you know, apply to this place, apply in this shift and blah, 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 and you'll be good to go. I'm like, all right. So I do that, and then it doesn't work. I'm like, all right, well, I'm sick of this. So I kind of go into survival mode and start, you know, kind of treating myself as like, okay, like pretending I don't have a job right now, which I mean, I still do, but like pretending I don't have a job right now, I need to like find a new job and then, you know, work the avenues of opportunities around here. And I happen to come across one where I get paid really good money, like more than I get paid now to work day shift Monday through Friday. To go around and assemble bicycles and grills, and that's it.
Oh, man, what would be the hours on that?
I go in at 8 a.m., and, like, I'm done by, like, 4 or 5. Just whatever the work's done for the day. But, you know, I can knock it out pretty fast because I've done those things before easily, you know?
Very nice.
It's a bit of a different job, but a little more wear and tear on my car, but it's going to be a lot nicer to have. Okay, I just sent you that video, by the way.
They will hear the ding of Aaron sending me a video.
But so I'm doing that now that I'm actually probably once, twice a week now. There's a a bike place here in town. It's kind of like the co-op in Morgantown where you go pick up, like, you know, you can kind of part out bikes and donate bikes and fix up bikes and, you know, buy them, rebuild sort of thing.
Rebuild, revent, yeah. Renew.
There's a place like that here, and I'm going to go in. Even today is my second day going in, but, like, fixing up bikes, like kids' bikes and whatever, and keeping the shop clean, that sort of thing. I'm just trying to find something to get me out of the house and doing something where I'm meeting people.
There you go. I mean, always nice to be social.
Yeah, so maybe it'll be my next U92. We'll find out.
Oh, right. He's wearing a U92 shirt right now.
I am, which I'm going to go get covered in grease. This is now my work shirt when I want to get dirty.
You know, U92 still has me as the admin of one of their Facebook pages. I'm like one of the admins on that thing. And I've just never said anything, and we'll see how long it takes for them to notice.
That's funny.
I'm checking out this Amazon thing you have.
Okay, so for people who aren't watching, I'll try to post a link to this in the show notes if possible. But it's a giant Amazon blimp, like a video. I don't know where it's at.
California now, or something. And that just, looks like
just drones flying out of the bottom. Like
that looks like the opening of a world war right there. That's that's a problem.
It is the most insane thing I've seen recently because it definitely
that looks the way they're descending upon that city looks like they are about to bring in the stormtroopers.
I know it's like it's so dystopian weirdness. Like I understand it because it seems functional. Like it seems
what
like
town
it's
a, is this?
I can't tell. At first I thought
mean,
it was
because that's interesting architecture. Okay.
It looks like somewhere near the desert in California, but I can't quite figure it out.
A step closer to the dystopian world I crave, the video
yeah,
title.
That's the caption.
That's beautiful. That's not incorrect.
Like, it makes sense because, like, I mean, to me, it makes functional sense logistically and, you know, all those things, but it just looks so freaking weird.
It does. It looks very, very incorrect.
It's so uncomfortable to look at.
I just that looks like they're sending in the Google, yeah, the Amazon Armada.
Google's next.
Oh yeah, oh you know they are. So.
So that's been my week. That's been my discovery of the week as well.
If you do end up doing a day shift, we'll probably have to reschedule when we tape these episodes.
We will. Yeah, I haven't quite figured out how the job's going to work yet. So I was going to. Well, I was going to kind of ride it out and see.
Hopefully, within the end of this month, I will be done with classes, and then
nice.
Things will be quite different. I'm
maybe
thinking,
we'll have to take a bye week or a short break until we get reconfigured.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that before already. We've already done like a couple of bye weeks.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of what I might do over the summer in like July or something. I might pop in over there and see what you're up to.
Yeah, you definitely should. I got a lot of people coming in June. I think Zane's coming out in June because he's got a wedding in California to go to. Parents are coming out here then. I think a lot of people are coming out here that month. So if you come in July, that's good because that's when... Because
then it's unique.
Then my calendar's open.
Then you can dedicate all your time to me.
Yeah. One of the nice things about this job, too, is, I mean, it's not... it's set up where I can kind of flex my own schedule a bit, so I don't have to worry about taking time off and doing all this stuff. So I can work extra in advance or however to make it work that, you know, I can spend as much time with people coming out here instead of having to work most of the time. So loving it.
Very nice. Well, should we get into the topics now?
I think so.
Okay. So there's one I want to add real fast because I've been paying attention to it and I don't have it in the notes, but it's something that I've been paying attention to. So recently, the Rolling Stones had to postpone their tour.
Ooh, why is that?
Because Mick Jagger needed heart surgery.
Oh, he is older. So
he is. Yeah, I mean they all are. It was. Let me see what the thing is here. He apparently had to go in to get a valve replaced on his heart.
Huh.
And it was like one of those things where they were about to go on tour. They were going to go on tour, I think, in April or like May or something like that. It was like next month.
Mm-hmm.
And then they like had to postpone everything. So they aren't starting their tour until like July, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to back out of one of the festivals that they were going to play. And I think it's been announced today that they've been replaced with Fleetwood Mac, which is an interesting replacement for the Rolling Stones. But
yeah.
You know, there you go. And it's been announced today that he's gone under the surgery, and he's, you know, it was very successful, and he's on the mend, and eventually the Stones are going to go back out on tour. But it was one of those things, like, I was paying very close attention to, because Lord knows we've had so many classic rockers croaking over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That I would not know what to think if Mick Jagger or someone was, like, gone.
Yeah, the first thought that came to my mind was how Tom Petty died.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, of course, his scenario is a bit different, but
his scenario is different because they had him on that fentanyl stuff.
I know.
But
I'm hoping he also, like, forced himself through touring instead of going to a doctor, so I'm hoping to see the way around where Jagger's kind of like, all right, I'm going to get heart surgery, actually take time to recover, and then
I think that's the lesson everyone's learning here. Like, everyone's realizing, oh, we're actually all, like, senior citizens now. We can't, like, just
I mean, those dudes are in their 60s through. And 70s, exactly. They can't power through like they used to.
No, I mean, that's... And they have been able to do pretty well. I saw the Stones in, like, 2014, I want to say. Mm-hmm.
They're coming through here. They're coming through here up in Seattle, and I really, really want to go see them, but the tickets are so god-awful
expensive. Oh, they're always expensive. They've always been expensive, and it's insane. Because they play for an hour. They do 1 hour,
mm-hmm.
and it's, like, crazy expensive. And, you know, but at the same time, it was, like, I think it was possibly the loudest concert I've been to. It was louder mm-hmm. than The Who. I walked away from that with my ears ringing.
The thing that kills me is I know if I don't go see the Stones now, it might be my last chance. Like, genuinely, because I don't know how much longer they're going to be a band for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think they said they were making a new record. I could be wrong about that, though.
Mm-hmm. But, that'd be interesting.
It is fascinating, though. I just felt it was worth sharing.
Mick, if you're listening, don't do fentanyl. Don't be like the rest of them.
Don't be even the rest
if it's,
of them.
Even if it's not your fault.
Even if it's prescribed. Say, give CBD. Me something that won't kill me.
Give the CBD, baby.
Yeah, really.
We'll go all Joe Rogan on this and just talk about CBD all the time. But
oh, jeez.
But speaking of fentanyl, it's kind of off topic here, but I saw an article, and I didn't read into it too much because I don't know if it's true, but apparently China has banned fentanyl, like, entirely.
That's probably for the best. I mean, yeah. Like, with the amount of people dying from it.
Like, why the hell do you need... I mean, okay, I could see why you need a pain medicine that strong, but at the same point, if you get to a point where you need a pain medicine that strong, there's probably a root cause that needs to be fixed first.
Do you think that that's going to be, like, the new hard drug that people do is these prescription painkillers?
Oh, I think it's always been a thing people have done. They just keep getting stronger.
Well, I mean,
stronger.
I guess, yeah, but, like, it's now going to be the new thing that gets outlawed. Like, oh, fentanyl's going to be in the black market, and then people are going to be like, oh, man. Fentanyl, man, we gotta try this.
Well, now, okay, well, if China's banning it, obviously the U.S. market's gonna suffer a bit, but I'm thinking what's gonna happen is it'll go underground and become even more dangerous. It's already, like, the most potent painkiller there is.
Mm.
And then, you know, it's just gonna be made illegally and become stronger, if not more, you know, not clean, so.
I mean, I can understand why people would want to get, like, onto painkillers. I actually can understand that because it's one of those drugs that, like, you don't really get high, mm-hmm. but it just numbs everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it happen firsthand. People get hooked on it for you know, good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And it just spirals out of control. It's super unfortunate, but that's, I mean, maybe this is a step in the right direction. Who knows? Because obviously, you know, where we're from is, like, one of the worst places for opioids.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
And that whole area, just that, not just a state, but that whole region is just, you know, rough. So hopefully, maybe it's a good step. We'll find out.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. So anyways, so hopefully Mick Jagger gets better. Because like I said, I want to see the Stones live. That'd be awesome.
It's worth it. I'll say that much. Even if their show is surprisingly short, which, like, compared to, like, McCartney, who went on for 3 hours, they very much were short. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I would say it's worth the investment to at least see him once.
Yeah, I'll try to weed my way up there because I don't think they're coming through till this. Well, if they're getting postponed, probably this later this summer, so I have more time.
Probably
get some cash. Maybe you can come out here at the same time. We'll see him together.
Oh, that'll be my second go. All right. Well, what topic should we discuss next?
Well, my phone is on charge, and I cannot really look right now, so...
Okay, so
I'm
then...
I'm afraid to touch it, or it's going to die, so we'll lose the video feed.
Okay, so then, while your phone charges, I guess we'll talk about this next thing, which I thought was fascinating when it got announced. And once again, I will be screen sharing with Aaron. Mm-hmm. These are all these bits that you'll have to cut out of the finished thing.
Or leave them in. We're raw. We're real. We're
raw as hell. So, we talked in an earlier episode about how Steven Spielberg was saying, oh, Netflix shouldn't be allowed to get Oscars anymore because they are, you know, digitally released and they aren't being screened in theaters. And because they're not being screened in theaters and on people's TVs or on their phones, that's television. They should get Emmys and not Oscars, which is stupid and dumb and an awful idea.
Yeah.
But it has reached a point now where the Justice Department warned the Academy that it may not do well for them to exclude Netflix.
Which I find interesting. I could see they generally keep the peace, or is it something different?
Here's what it is. Here, the word I got was that, according to Variety, the Justice Department has warned the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences that its potential rule changes limiting the eligibility of Netflix and other streaming services for the Oscars could raise antitrust concerns and violate competition law.
Okay.
So, one of the chiefs of the Department of Justice said, in the event that the Academy, an association that includes multiple competitors in its membership, establishes certain eligibility requirements for the Oscars that eliminate competition without pro-competitive justification, such conduct may raise antitrust concerns. So it's essentially the Department of Justice is taking the angle of, if you exclude Netflix, then that is in turn excluding competition with the major film studios, which Netflix is clearly, it's competition with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they say, if you exclude your competition, then you are running the risk of becoming monopolistic. And then we have to step in. So essentially, the United States government essentially told the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, if you exclude Netflix, we may have to start coming down on you.
Interesting.
As a business monopoly. Now, personally, for as much as I dislike the current regime, I think that would honestly be a net positive. I mean,
to include the other studios?
To include Netflix, yeah. Because I actually agree. I think that to exclude the new format of filmmaking and the new platforms that are giving filmmakers a voice, I actually agree. That is monopolistic. Mm-hmm. And it is imposing at that point a belief system that here's how the business works and we're not going to change it. And it's being resistant to the new changes in how people consume media, how people create media, and it is altogether for the worse. So I actually think that in a rare instance, I can understand why the Department of Justice would want to step in. I can also understand why people would be upset because, hey, why is the government telling artists what to do?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, that's also understandable. Like, I agree with that as well. The government shouldn't have a say in how art is treated and how it's processed.
Well, I'm
but at the
lean
same
in,
time,
what's that?
Oh, you go.
I was gonna say I'm gonna lean in on this too, saying that you know, especially and not just Netflix, but you have AT&T has a studio now. Apple's creating that sort of content to rival Netflix. I mean, there's a lot of people doing their own thing. I mean, those are the two off the top of my head, but there's many more emerging production studios. I mean, Amazon Prime is one of the biggest ones.
And you
behind
got
Netflix,
you have Hulu, you have Amazon, you got Netflix. I mean, and the truth
why,
of it,
you know, why should they be excluded? Because I mean,
exactly.
To me, they seem like viable contenders for film. I mean, they're putting out good content. You know,
they absolutely do. I mean, the reality of it is that the thing that should distinguish film and television is that okay, like a film is a film, and a television show is a television show, and there is a fundamental difference, and everyone knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The problem for people like Spielberg is that he goes, well, it's not being screened in movie theaters. And I'm certain I said this in the last time we talked about it, but like, A, the worst place to see a movie these days is in the movie theater because you're surrounded by people who treat it like they're sitting on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just horrendous. Like when I went to see Captain Marvel a couple weeks ago, this like family brought their like infant kid with them and baby's like crying through the movie. And I'm like, I'm trying to watch.
Yeah.
Get a sitter. Like, you know.
And you've already paid like $20 for the ticket.
Yeah, I've already paid like the $20 for the ticket. So then your kid can like scream throughout it. Like that's BS. Mm-hmm. So, and I think Nick of Saturday Night Caffeine, he went and saw Jordan Peele's Us recently, and he had the same exact thing. It was like people were like screaming and hollering throughout the whole movie, and he couldn't like watch it. Because the audience was being so disruptive.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is like why people don't, combined with the price, is why a lot of film appreciators and just the general public, people don't go to movie theater anymore because it's lousy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that fun an experience anymore.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's like, well, if Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Apple or whoever are offering better products and a better way for people to watch it, that's just where the industry is moving.
Yeah.
And to deny that is very, very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's arrogant, and it's, you know, at that point, turning a blind eye to progress, both artistic and business-wise.
Yeah.
So, any words on your end?
No, I completely agree.
Mm.
I'm also at the same time trying to deal with, now I got like a feedback loop through my speaker. I don't know if you could hear that, but...
No.
Okay, good.
Well, like half and half, but it was like...
My volume's all the way down on my phone, yet suddenly the volume like boosted to a normal volume, and even though it's low, so now I'm just trying to like surround it with things to block the sound from traveling anywhere.
The ongoing thing, if I do go over to Washington, we have to tape an episode of the show, and like in person.
Yeah.
And just so I can see you try to fiddle with how the equipment all is supposed to function.
Oh, if we do that, it's going to be a completely different setup.
Yeah, we'll just have one stereo mic.
We'll just go, we'll do two videos, like a two video cam, go set up like a small table somewhere in the middle of the woods.
In the middle of the woods. What's our power supply going to be?
Oh, we got laptops. I think that'll be enough.
Yeah, okay. So then we have our laptop running for like the whole, and hope that the battery keeps moving.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, I'm worried about the cameras, but you know, it's just a crazy idea.
Oh, man.
Okay, so this caught my eye, and I remember seeing this floating around the internet a bit, but there's this whole thing with Garfield phones washing up on beaches.
Yeah, so this is an older story, but yeah. it caught my eye because of the headline. The New York Times reports on why do Garfield phones keep washing up on this beach?
Which, first of all, like, what? Like, why specifically this?
Like, it's not just that it's phones. It's that it's specifically branded Garfield phones.
I know.
And they're washing up ashore. Why?
Why?
In Western France, of all places.
Do we have an answer?
Let's see. All right. For three decades, I'm just reading the article now. For three decades, it was a mystery that seemed to defy belief. Bright orange plastic novelty phones shaped like the grumpy cartoon cat Garfield kept washing up on the rocky Atlantic shoreline of Brittany in western France. Oh, man. This waste is over 30 years old and we are still finding bits, Fabien Bleu, the director of the Iroy Marine Natural Park, told the news site France Info, citing it as an example of plastic debris that never fully breaks down and contributes to ocean pollution. Yeah, probably. Because it's a telephone with Garfield on it.
All of our, all the whales and the big fishies in the sea swimming around trying to get their food, you know, get their food, getting filled up.
And they're eating Garfield's phones. Busy chowing on his lasagna.
Yeah, and then they're eating that, so...
From the little I'm glancing over this article, it looks like the big issue on the New York Times side, at least, is that, hey, this is polluting the ocean, which, yeah, of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, at the same time, it's not explaining who or why all these phones were tossed into the sea.
I know. I thought I read something somewhere that there was, like, a cargo crate that had, you know, fallen and off the side of a ship or something like
that. Is that what it is? Okay, yeah. Between 2008 and 2016, shipping companies lost over 1,500 containers on average each year, most during accidents such as capsizing, running aground, or when sailing in heavy seas. So what you're telling me here is that a cargo ship holding nothing but Garfield phones at some point crashed, went Titanic, and just lost all of its supply.
Which is crazy to think about, because one thing there's an abundance of out here are giant cargo
Garfield
ships.
Phones.
That too, maybe. But there are ports all over here, and you see these cargo ships. I mean, these things are the size of cities. They are massive. And imagine one of them sinking or whatever, or even just something falling off the side of it. It's just like crazy to think about, because they're just absolutely massive.
You think Jim Davis knows about this? You think there's a Garfield comic dedicated to his merchandise washing up in France?
Maybe. I want to find it now.
Oh, man. That'd be amazing. I had to laugh at it because I saw this article and it reminded me of like some video that John showed me of this guy ranting about the artistic genius of Garfield for like an hour and a half. And boy almighty, I watched all of that and I was like, why did you send this to me, John?
Then why did you watch the whole thing?
Because I wanted to see if it was actually building something, and it built to this man being a lunatic. If you place John Arbuckle's arm against his face, it creates a perfect Fibonacci sequence.
Was that actually a thing?
Yes, that's actually what was in this video, and I was like, oh my lord.
Oh man. I want to see it. I hope there's a bunch of conspiracy theories tied into it.
Oh, I'll send it to you now.
Okay.
You won't be... Unlike the Amazon drone thing, there's no chance you're going to be able to watch it during the show, but it was insane.
It might provide me the same educational value, though.
Oh, it's crazy.
Oh, man.
So, I don't know. They didn't really tell me why the Garfield... I guess... A ship and cargo thing just overturned itself and sent these phones to the beach, man. Garfield's destroying the ocean.
We need to regulate comics. That's the real threat to the nature here.
We do need to regulate comics. This proves Bill Watterson correct that merchandising comic strips was leading to the end of civilization.
That's 100% proof. That is not a correlation.
This is why he never made Calvin and Hobbes merchandise. He didn't want to pollute the ocean.
One of the things I'll miss about working at an Amazon warehouse is seeing all the off-brand Calvin and Hobbes merchandise that comes through.
Because it'll be like stickers of
mostly like stuffed animals. It's just like so like trying to be Calvin and Hobbes, but they're just so poorly made. Like all the features are disproportionate and the faces all over the place. Like it's hilarious, but
jeez,
I will miss seeing that. I won't at all.
There you go. So next topic on our list here, we talked before about the music festival business,
mm-hmm.
and how it's actually just a chaotic mess.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that this thing existed, and hopefully you'll be able to fill me in on what this was supposed to be. But there was this thing that happened a couple weeks ago called the Ultra Music Festival. And I don't really know what this is, but I was reading online that it was essentially Firefest 2.0. But like a slightly more successful version of it, but still really lousy.
Interesting.
So let's see here. Like this article in the Miami New Times, the headline, "No one walked away from Ultra Music Festival 2019 unscathed." It's nearly 2 a.m. Saturday and the Rickenbacker... freaking Chrome. It's nearly 2 a.m. and the Rickenbacker Causeway feels like it's been plucked and dropped into a zombie movie. As distorted beats echo in all directions, blinding lights from police cars and Ultra Music Festival pierce the darkness, illuminating helicopters overhead. They're ostensibly there for safety to ensure no one gets hurt as thousands of people leave Ultra's new Virginia Key site en masse. But far from being comforting, the choppers only magnified the dystopian nightmare unfolding. Rather than the smooth exit promised by festival organizers, departing Virginia Key feels more like a gauntlet. For the masses, there are two options to escape the island. So it was never freaking music festival on an island.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for hours as people push and shove to secure a spot aboard one of the festival shuttles, all while trying not to hit one's face or get one's foot run over by the arriving buses, or make the 3-plus-mile trek across the Rickenbacker Causeway on foot. As thousands opt for the latter, the lanes of the causeway quickly become commandeered by the horde, which somehow avoids getting struck by cars zooming past. Not long after Marshmello's Happier has wrapped up. Is that what this was? Was it Marshmello up to something?
I have no idea. This is the first I'm hearing about, but I'm looking into it, and I can already see why it's such a shit show.
Okay, well, tell me what you're seeing.
Okay, let's just look at the Wikipedia page. There's not much information about this year, but, you know, previous years, it's kind of given me a lot of information about who played and you know, where it was at and blah, 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 blah. The biggest thing I see is that this festival, it says here in 2017, 165,000 people were at a music festival. Mm. First, okay, so I don't know. Okay,
Ice Cube was there in 2017.
It's crazy to me to think that, you know, you have, okay, when the wall came down in the 90s, and, you know, there was a big coup in Russia.
Like the Berlin Wall?
The Berlin Wall, yeah, yeah, yeah. Follow me here.
How did we get here?
Hey, follow me with this.
I'm gonna stop sharing my screen so you can see my confused face. How did we get here?
Okay, so then that came down, you know, a lot of things happening in Russia at that time as well.
Yeah.
Long story short, they wanted to have a big concert, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but I can't remember the name, even if it even had a name, but they had a bunch of bands come play in Russia in like 91, 92, maybe 93. Mm-hmm. AC/DC was one of those bands. I remember seeing a video of that performance, and it's in Moscow with 250,000 people, you know, 250,000 people at this concert. I'm just trying to think logistically what a nightmare that is.
Well,
to manage that many people, and then you have this a modern day festival with what I'm assuming people are, you know, probably rougher to manage in this case because there's a lot more drugs and okay, kind of that thing involved.
Here's what I'm seeing here now, thanks to Wikipedia, which of course is always everyone's favorite citation of credible sources. So I guess the big thing was that this year they moved it to Virginia Key.
Mm-hmm.
And this was because the commissioners of Miami voted unanimously against allowing the festival to be hosted at Bayfront Park, citing noise complaints and other concerns among downtown residents. So I guess this was a music festival which had been going on since since 2009. So it's like the 10th year this has happened. And
oh, I can see it happening from 99.
Well, I guess it was originally called The Beach. It says here an electronic music festival. So, okay, so this is, I'm getting a better sense of it now.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it was a music festival that showcased a lot of like dubstep and electronic music.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of those like giant rave music festivals, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I guess with 2019, it kept happening in Miami at the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess people in Miami were finally like, look, we're trying to sleep. And these people are like keeping us up every day, and mm-hmm. we cannot deal with this, so you got to move it. So they decided to move it to the barrier island of Virginia Key. And let's see, the big headliners for day one, I guess, were like the Chainsmokers and Deadmau5, and then, the transportation was like bad, I guess.
Well, I'm trying to think. You have, it's a U.S. city. It's a big U.S. city, so it's got, you know, it's got public transportation, but it's also got logistical issues. But then you cram an extra 165,000 people into a spot for a weekend. I'm surprised. I'm not surprised they moved it. I'm also not surprised that it was kind of difficult to manage even this time around.
Well, I mean, it was straight up people were like using hashtags like hashtag I survived and hashtag Fire Festival 2 for this. I mean, I'm not really getting a sense of what this happened at this other than just like the transportation was bad, because at the very least, like, here's the difference between this and Fire Festival. I'm at least getting from what I'm reading about this that at least at the Ultra Music Festival, like, the music actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I know I said this the last time we talked about it, but the thing that surprised me or stunned me about Fire Festival was that I was like, it seemed like the music was so inconsequential and unimportant
mm-hmm.
in that event, because like it never even happened. No mm-hmm. one ever took the stage because people left before anything even occurred.
Yeah.
Because they were just so upset with the accommodations. This, at least, like people performed, at least from what I can gather, there was actually some performances.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it was like people were like trying to leave en masse.
Yeah.
So I'm like really perplexed as to what was supposed to be happening at this, or like what finally tore it with people. I'm certain we'll get like five documentaries about it. But like,
If it even goes that far, you know, it just seems like, because I, like I said, I haven't really heard about, I mean, I might have heard about it once or twice in the past, but I think just what it is, it's just a big music festival that isn't in a place where it can be, where it can hold that many people. Then, you know, with that comes issues, and that's just kind of the big story here,
I guess.
And then there's the whole thing, like, I noticed that people were using the hashtags of, like, Fire Festival 2 and I Serve, you know, what, like, all those hashtags they're using, apparently. Fire Festival's become such a culture, like, it's like a cult thing, you know, that it was such an absolute mess.
What's it a culture of? Please tell me what that's a culture of.
Well, okay, so people were reflecting on it being like, okay, here's what it was, you know, just this absolute mess that nobody should have been a part of, but people want to be a part of it because it's such, like, a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, for someone to say, like, you know, with Fire Festival being such a big thing that happened and went terribly wrong, and for someone to say, like, yeah, I was there firsthand to experience it, that's like a credit people, you know, want to put on themselves, you know. So this is a whole weird thing I'm not used to, I guess.
Literally, the only thing I'm seeing here, is that there were transportation issues.
Yeah, which
so I guess the problem was that, okay, so the stage and the festival would have been, like, on this island, mm-hmm. but then people would have, like, not been staying on the island. They were staying at, like, hotels back in Miami, mm-hmm. and they were having trouble getting from the island to back to Miami. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm seeing here. Which is a softball and not even close to what happened at Fire Festival.
Yeah.
So they got what they were wanting. Like, there's a difference between not being able to catch a bus and, like, not being able to, like, eat or sleep.
Yeah. Speaking of Fire Festival, I finally watched the Hulu documentary yesterday.
Oh, yeah. So you finally watched, because for those of you who don't remember, when we did talk about Fire Festival, I'd seen both the Hulu and the Netflix one, and Aaron had only seen the Netflix one. Mm-hmm.
But now Spotify has for Hulu for free, so I finally got to watch it.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I'm stepping up in the world. Mm. But so I finally watched it. It's so much better.
The Hulu one?
Yeah. It's still, the only thing that caught my eye was the fact that, I don't know, if it seemed like it paralleled the actual festival in a way that it was hard to follow. Mm. Like, there was a storyline there, like a base storyline there, but there was so much happening in the documentary, and, like, it jumped around so much, I couldn't quite figure out what was happening.
I think they both complement each other. I think they're both kind of on equal playing field. I think it's worth watching the Netflix one first, even if it's biased, which it is.
Oh, yeah, but definitely. Like,
watch the Netflix one first and then watch the Hulu one, mm-hmm. because both of them are talking about the same event and yet are taking it from different angles.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, my opinion, I thought, you know, because they interviewed Billy McFarland and some of those other higher-up people, mm-hmm. in the Hulu one. But my opinion of everyone is still exactly the same after the fact, so...
Yeah.
I would say they cover the grounds pretty well, respectively.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think I said in the episode that, like, my only issue with the Hulu one is that they pinned the problem on millennials, and I was like, please.
Yeah, they kind of... I mean, I was laughing through that sequence, but they're kind of, like, playing into that a bit much.
And I was like, come on.
Like, you're talking about such a small subsection of millennials, you know?
I was like, hey, guess what? The millennial generation is not to blame for people being scammers. Yeah. like, that's... Yeah, like scammers, there were scammers have been around before.
For years, you know?
The scammers existed in Generation X too. So, like, let's not pin that on the millennials, please.
Oh man,
I don't know. So, I think people may have overreacted with Ultra Music Festival a little bit.
Yeah.
What time are we at?
We've got a few minutes left. We're about 45 minutes in.
All right, so
I gotta be somewhere at 1, so we should wrap up here pretty soon. We got like 5, okay, 10
so
minutes.
Then all right, so then let's talk about our recommendations then.
Yeah, what do you got?
All right, well, you remember a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about, like, all of our recommendations of albums of the years or of the decades and stuff.
Uh huh.
And I called the 2010s the death of music.
Yeah.
Well, that opinion has not changed, but I will say this at least. I did finally discover a record that I think is worthy of being an album of 2014. Mm-hmm. Because when I went into the 2010s, because I still have my list here,
mm-hmm.
and by the time I got to 2014, that year I thought was so unimpressive album wise that I had nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had my list here and I got to 2014 and I went, I honestly don't have anything worth calling album of the year, because even the better albums that came out that year I don't think are very good. So I now can officially say that I found what is the album of the year for 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be St. Vincent's self-titled record.
Okay, that's a solid record.
It is a solid record. Now, I first heard it a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I never was too big into St. Vincent because I hadn't really heard her records too much. I'd heard her new one,
mm-hmm.
the Mass Education record that came out a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and was not impressed. And the media kind of built it up as, oh, here's this great Vanguard person. And so I only had that, the new record to go off of. And I was like, really? Like, yeah. This is the big thing. But that self-titled record I listened to a couple weeks ago. And I've returned to it like two times since. And it's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
It's like got a really interesting mixture of, like, you can tell there's like a sort of bluesy center underneath it.
Uh-huh.
But it's also, like, filtered through this, like, Bowie, like, Berlin era-esque and also Nine Inch Nails-esque kind of, like, synthesized filter,
mm-hmm.
that is, like, both funky and soulful while, like, glitched and disturbed at the same time. You know, and I think it really works. I think the only problem I have with the record is I think it front-loads itself with its best tracks,
mm-hmm.
first. Like, the opening five cuts, I think, are, like, the album's entire high point, and then it sort of just, like, trails off.
Yeah.
But that's something I've become accustomed to with a lot of modern records, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of having the middle bit be, like, a sort of middling thing, and then have the strong opening and the strong ending,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of just fallen by the wayside. It's very much like now you open with your best cuts and then just eventually, like, peter out until people, like, hit the next album to stream, so
yeah.
But I would say that that's a worthy record worth listening to. I'm giving it a recommend.
All right,
what about you?
I'm gonna do, it's kind of they're complimentary with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading the book. My headphone just scraped against the thing there. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
Huh, interesting. It was very loud in my left ear, so. But yeah, so I'm reading a book called Alone on the Wall. It's by this guy named Alex Honnold, who is the subject of the documentary Free Solo.
Mm.
So read the book, which is super awesome. It's just kind of talking about, this is before he did the thing that happened in Free Solo, which I won't ruin if you don't know what it is. It kind of prefaces that with, like, you know, the story of him and leading up to the day it was published, you know, the time it was published, which was about a year before he... about a year before the events in Free Solo happened. So, and then Free Solo is just, you know, did it win? Yeah, it won.
Yes.
Best documentary at the Oscars. Yeah. Or the Oscars? I forget the awards.
Yes, the Oscars.
Yeah, here we go. See, I follow it. I know what's going on. But yeah, won best documentary. They pair together very well. It's a very cool story. It's got me being more outdoorsy and stuff. So, yeah, those are my recommendations of the week.
Well, very nice. I think next week we'll probably be doing, I guess, a pre-discussion on Record Store Day.
Oh, yeah.
As that is soon approaching, and I've wanted to talk about this forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to do like a pre-Record Store Day and a post-Record Store Day discussion.
Yeah.
But, so look forward to that next week. Aaron, tell them where they can find us.
All right. So you can find us on your podcast platform of choice, eventually on Apple Podcasts. They just don't respond to me, so who knows, if ever. But yeah, find us on your podcast platform of choice. Subscribe to us, leave a rating, review, and all that jazz. And links to our social media and other stuff you can find in the show notes. And I think that about wraps us up, right?
Yep.
All right. I'm Aaron. That is Jacob. This is The Juke Joint. We'll see you next round.
Bye-bye.